Are you ready to be a better, more successful, and open-minded trader and investor? I'm Serge Berger, head trader and investment strategist at thesteadytrader.com, and I want to help you get there. Whether you've been investing for years or are just getting your feet wet, this podcast will help you cut through the noise and get dialed in on the big picture. We will utilize research, guest interviews, and real-time analysis of the market. We're at a critical juncture in the market where knowledge really will mean power.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of our Study Wealth podcast, where we are looking at the market through the lens of what is actually moving the markets and not so much from a micro perspective, meaning it's the dog that wags the tail, it's the big things that matter, not so much a trend line on its own on a chart, although of course trend lines are important as well. What I'd like to cover today is something that I think is pretty much on every trader and investor's mind here as we are rounding off the summer of 2022 and heading into the autumn period, which historically speaking does tend to be more above average volatile for risk assets. And the question, of course, is, has the stock market bottomed? I guess one part of that question is, has it bottomed for 2022? The second question, or maybe sort of an extrapolation of it, is, has the stock market bottomed, period, like for the bear market that we've had? To put things into perspective, we are today going to look at a bunch of interesting statistics that I think are going to help us paint a good picture for perspective. Remember, it's all about perspective. I think too many people are looking for just, you know, telling me what to buy and sell, but without understanding the perspective that is required, it is pretty much impossible to risk manage our way through the markets, meaning, you know, adding positions, closing positions, you know, moving money around different sectors and parts of the market as the economic cycle goes through its motions. So we're going to look at a whole bunch of economic data. I'm going to show you guys, or not show, I'm going to talk about what I think is one of the best parts of the market to be allocating money to right now, or according to our research. I can't remember, this is not financial advice. It's just merely our views and our research. We're going to look at, again, the bigger picture stuff. I think, not to take too much away from what I talk about, but I do think that we are just about to enter the second half of the bear market ball game, where the focus is going to be much more on the economic deterioration rather than the focus on interest rate hikes, although that will remain important as well. So just for a little bit of perspective, and I think this is really in everyone's mind, the S&P 500, if we take that as our equity benchmark for risk assets and a lot of people's portfolios, whether you are looking at your 401k or your IRA or another account of any type that you manage yourself, the S&P from peak to trough this year had a drawdown, meaning lost about 24% or so. Historically speaking, that is a pretty meaningful drawdown and one where one could expect a bear market of average depth and maybe even average duration to come to an end. We've then had a really sharp rally, and I am going to still label this as a bear market rally, which is basically the summer 2022 rally, with about 18%. Now, just so you know, for example, in the year 2000 and the ensuing, I think, 1.5 to 2 years that followed the internet bubble, we had in the NASDAQ 100 now, I think at least one 50% bear market rally, 50, like 50, and several between sort of 40 and 50%. Now, that's, you know, like twice as much as what we had in this summer rally. Now, of course, I'm comparing the NASDAQ versus the S&P 500, which the latter, the S&P, is less volatile than the NASDAQ 100 because it has less tech stocks in it. Nevertheless, it's been a significant rally. And, you know, typically, as we see and we have seen once again this year, is people get bullish on the way up and bearish on the way down. And, you know, while that's a little bit ironic, it's actually no laughing matter because it hurts a lot of people. One thing that we've been talking about for, I want to say 2, 3, maybe even 4 years now to our clients, both on the studytrader.com side and also at Blue Marlin Advisors, our investment advisory firm, is what we consider to be just factual, which is that a lot of people have forgotten what an actual economic downturn that lasts for more than 2 months looks like. Not only in terms of the economy itself, but also in terms of your investments. Like, again, I'm going to go back to the S&P 500 as a simple but pretty good benchmark for most people's portfolios. Even if we just, you know, look back, and this is like 12 years in the making. We've had a raging bull market. I'm just on my own here going to pull up a chart of the S&P. I know you obviously can't see this because there's no video in this podcast, at least not in this episode. But we've had a pretty much, you know, very stellar with very little volatility rally over the past 12 years. If you, I'm going to say over the past 12 years until or into 2021, because 2021 was already kind of the end of that bull market. But basically from the spring of 2009 into, I want to say, so we can segment this in two ways. We can say the spring of 2009 into February 2020, and then we had COVID, of course. And as we had some volatility there, but it lasted about 3 months, not even probably. But then it really kind of all topped out in a more meaningful fashion in late 2021, but really underneath the surface, things really were already kind of over by the spring of 2021. But the point is we had a pretty low volatility, steady move to the upside over a period that lasted, I'm going to say, at least, say, 11, 12 years. Over that period, the S&P 500 returned about 15% per year. 15. Historically speaking, the S&P returns about 9% per year. Not only did we have a really strong outperformance and brought forward returns, probably for years to come, we also had very low volatility, as I said several times already. And that combination of, again, the S&P on average having made 15% over that bull market period with very low volatility and every single dip was bought, it has gotten a lot of people to basically just blindly buy the dip. It's gotten conditioned to buy the dip without really asking any questions. And quite frankly, that's not such a bad thing, because as I always say, you know, trends work until they stop working. One of the easiest and probably one of the best trades would have been just to buy the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ 100 back in 2009 and just let it rip. I mean, really, and I mean this in all sincerity, that is probably one of the better trades that one could have done. Now, of course, from a diversification perspective, we don't want to put all eggs in our basket, but I'm just saying for argument's sake, let's say you would have just literally bought the QQQ ETF and you would have just let it rip for 12 years. That would have been probably one of the better trades out there. But of course, along the way, we got a lot of news. We had, you know, various scares along the way. We had some geopolitical events. We had the 2011 situation with Greece. That has surfaced several times since again, but that was the big one. Then, of course, we had COVID. From my perspective, when we had COVID, we kind of went into supercharge mode to get the last of the people lured into the markets. And we saw that in 2021, for those of you guys that participated in the markets in 2021, you saw the froth. I mean, it was all over the place. It was NFTs, it was cryptos. And by the way, I will never badmouth those things. I think there are tremendous stories there. It's a developing industry. So there's going to be lots of false starts and fits, and a lot of the things are not going to work, and some things ultimately will. We're very much like we had in the year 2001, 2002, as we had that sort of deflation of the internet bubble, and ultimately we had massive companies like Amazon, Google, and so on and so forth, grow out of that. So, I think that's a very similar period. But you saw the froth in 2021, and if you looked a bit underneath the surface, and that's our job as, both as portfolio managers at Blue Marlin Advisors, but also on the research side at thestudytrader.com, is to understand, you know, where we are in the economic cycles and look a little bit deeper underneath the surface and understand that things are right now not as good as they seem. So to cut right to the chase, I think there is a 40% chance that we have seen the lows for the year in U.S. equity market terms. And again, I'm going to use the S&P here as a benchmark, or the SPY ETF if you're using an ETF for that. And let me explain why. Well, first of all, we did have quite negative sentiment into June, and positioning was quite lackluster. And quite frankly, people that were short, some of them, at least some of the people I certainly spoke to, they were happy just to cover those shorts and have a nice summer. And that, of course, ultimately, took out, the selling pressure of the market. And then as algorithms came into the market, which we started to see quite significantly around the 4th of July period, heading into the middle part of July, more shorts were forced to cover, the ones that didn't cover in June or May. And that, of course, had that snowball effect. Now, because of the past 12 years of that bull market that I've said that I've talked about here for a few minutes, again, people being conditioned to buy every dip, the prevalent thought out there right now is once again that we're going to have a V-shaped recovery. And let's forget about the economic part of it for a minute, which I don't think that we're anywhere near a V-shaped recovery, but let's just talk about the stock market for a minute. Now, if we have a situation, and this is obviously once in a 100-year sort of event, hopefully, or at least it certainly has been the COVID situation or the global pandemic situation. We had a V-shaped recovery, not only in the economy, but also in the stock market. Now, if you X out that period, and I think we do have to take that out because that was an anomaly, even though it was getting us into the last leg of the 12-year bull market, I think. Normally, when you have an actual bear market, like an actual contraction, a recession, an economic recession, whether, weak, sort of semi-strong or strong, they don't end in the terms of the stock market on one day. Like, we do tend to see sort of retests of those lows, like a W-shape recovery in the stock market, if you will. So basically, the way you would want to picture that is if we had the lows in June, we did have lows in June, the question is, were they the lows and will they ever be retested? So if we have a V-shaped recovery, we're in the equity market, we're not going to retest those lows. We may get, a little bit lower from here, from the peak of the bear market rally, halfway down, but we're not going to retest it. If we have a W-shape, we should technically retest or come really close to retesting, or maybe even little undercut a little bit the June lows. And then we would work our way higher again to those, summer 2022 bear market rally highs, and then consolidate and then ultimately go higher into 2023, or at least maybe the second half of 2023. But I think that is the path that I think has the highest chance. I think that has a 60% chance. So, as I said before, I think there's a 40% chance that we've seen the lows in the S&P 500 for the year. But I think we have a 60% chance that we're going to retest those lows at some point this year. As we talk about 2023, or as we think about 2023, I think that's where things get a bit more murky. I think right now it's actually clear as mud, to be honest with you, as we look at the 2023 in terms of the actual market. So, this is just the first part I wanted to talk about here in terms of, what are the odds that we're going to retest the lows? What are the odds that we won't retest the lows this year? I think for 2023, I would prefer not to make too much of a forecast right now for the S&P. I think there we're going to start looking at growth stories coming back, not necessarily on January 1st, but as we start looking deeper through the second quarter of 2023, as we start getting more flushes out of the risk, people really starting to get back into the bond market and ultimately the economy making a slow comeback, I think those high growth stories, whether that is something like a PayPal or pick your favorite growth story in fintech or anything, growth like tech related, usually growth means tech for them, not always, but a lot of times. So That's kind of what we see for 2023. And I think if we look at this year, my favorite asset allocation right now really is in the bond market. So the equity market, again, I do think we're going to see a trading range. I think if we look at the S&P 500 itself, I think we have a well-defined trading range. Whether it holds exactly, of course, we don't know. But I think from here on into the rest of the year, the way I think about the S&P 500 is that we have a trading range that has a high somewhere around 4,300. So basically the recent highs. Maybe we overshoot a touch, certainly possible. Wouldn't want to rule that out. But I think at the same time, also, we have a very well-defined low within that trading range. Again, whether we overshoot that or don't quite come to it is kind of a side point. But that low is somewhere just north of 3,600. So maybe it's 3,650 within that range. So on the low end, about 3,650 or so. And on the high end, about 4,300. So we have that range. And quite frankly, that is actually really good to know for risk management purposes. If we know, or at least it becomes our sort of, you know, base case around which we can then trade and invest, that we have a trading range and we have roughly what the high end of the trading range is, as we have the lower end of the trading range, that's pretty awesome. Like, a lot of times we don't have that. You know, but I think here we have a pretty good chance of being able to define the rest of the year within those 2 points. Now, let's talk about the big picture. Remember, I always say this is all about the big picture. We've talked a bit, you know, short-term, you know, chart stuff here, but really it's all being driven by the big picture. And I would like to drop a few data points here that, to me, are really the focal point of why I think there's only a 40% chance that we've seen the lows, meaning a 60% chance that we could still revisit those lows. So let me be clear. I think even if we revisit those lows, to me, that is the 60% chance. The 40% chance of having seen the lows would mean that we don't retest those lows. So if we retest those lows, that falls into the 60%, if that makes sense, right? So what I probably should have said is that there's a 40% chance that we don't revisit the lows, but a 60% chance that we do revisit the June lows or get really close to it or even go through it a little bit before then rebounding. So let's talk a little bit of macro. Now, everyone's focused on things like the midterm elections. All those data points are important. Historically speaking, midterms haven't been something that completely moves the market in crazy ways. Now, you might get movements ahead of the midterms, but once you get to the midterms, it tends to be a very near-term driven rally or sell-off and a little bit of jerkiness, and then that kind of becomes less important. If we look a little bit deeper underneath the surface, the global economy, and I'm going to focus here on the U.S. economy and the European economy, because both of those, I think, are important for the risk assets that probably most users here are listening to. I think both of those are deteriorating. Now, let's quickly start with Europe. I mean, German consumer confidence, and I'm looking at my screen here on my Reuters, German consumer confidence just came out again this week. I mean, it's like negative 36. I mean, I don't remember, the chart I have only goes back to 2005. It's never even come like within anywhere in the same like galaxy of where we are right now. Like, consumer confidence is an absolute disaster. Now, it's easy to look at, to say that and A, not really care, and B, kind of think, oh, that's just a data point that may not matter that much. But I want you to think about what that means for the economy. If consumer confidence sucks, and by the way, it's awful in the US as well. Like, it really is awful. Like, you know, University of Michigan consumer sentiment is a disaster. And why is that important? Well, it's important because people are going to spend less. So let's talk about that point a little bit, because it's really important. Again, this is really the stuff that moved, this is like the big tailwinds or in this case, headwinds for things. And it really, really does matter. If we think about this summer, what happened? Well, a lot of people were traveling. I mean, I know people, everyone that I know traveled to more places than they've, you know, traveled over like a 10-year period in the past. I'm sure you guys all know people that traveled, but I also know that a lot of the people that I've talked to that traveled, they are now saying they're not traveling for a while. In fact, I extrapolate, a lot of these people are saying, well, I'm not going to spend much money for a while. Because what they just did is they had the, if you're a Seinfeld aficionado, the Summer of George, which was like a very short-lived moment for George Costanza. But what they did is they had like the time of their life, basically, is what that kind of, you know, take time for themselves is really what that means. And they traveled, right? They spent money, they traveled, which they hadn't been able to do for 2 years, or at least not to the extent that they could do this year. And so there was a lot of pent-up demand. And quite frankly, I think that's also why some of the data points that some people look at from an economic perspective haven't deteriorated yet to the point where they would be if we didn't have this post-COVID recovery period. This brings me to probably the most important point. Everyone's saying, well, the Fed has hiked rates and we still have consumer spending. Well, we have inflation and people are still spending. And that's all true. These things don't turn around on a dime. Like consumer spending doesn't change like in a minute. It takes time. And again, especially this year where we also then had the summer period. So the Fed started hiking rates in the spring. And inflation, of course, got out of control this year, in the first half of this year of 2022. And all of that takes a little bit of time to really come to fruition in, of course, a negative way. And I think it usually takes about 3 months. Now, again, it may have been taking a little bit longer this year because we had that summer, that post-COVID travel and spending and fun summer. I think everyone deserved. So maybe let's say it took 4 to 5 months for tighter monetary conditions, which are like it's the biggest tightening of economic conditions in history, like ever, between what inflation's already doing for people and between, of course, what central banks are doing. And here we're going to focus on the Fed. So that is going to take time. And so I think as we get into September and then maybe more importantly, October and November, I think that is really where we're going to see economic data start to deteriorate. Like one thing that I watch very closely something called the ISM Manufacturing Index. If you don't know what that means, what that is, I'll keep mentioning this in our Steady Wealth podcast. But basically, it measures the economic activity from a manufacturing perspective. When it drops below the 50 level, that is usually when the equity market has another leg lower. Like right now, I'm looking at my screen, the ISM is like around 52.5, 53. I would be surprised if the ISM doesn't go below 53 at some point, below 50, in October, November, at the latest, and then like crater into like the mid to low 40s. And if and when that happens, the odds of the S&P having another leg lower, again, I think retesting those June lows, are extremely high. So I would say, and not to get too granular and put you to sleep, but I think this is important. If the ISM drops below 50 and like really accelerates, I think then the odds of us retesting the lows, the June lows, and maybe even breaking below that go from 60 to like 80 really quickly. And that'll be something, you know, I'll update you guys. And of course, we're updating our clients on the research side and also on the investment manager side with our investment advisory firm. So let me give you some more numbers. So Germany, again, horrible consumer confidence, U.S. as well. I think as we head into the autumn and winter period, we're just a few weeks away from people having to start heat their homes, certainly in the northern parts of Europe. And this is, I'm quickly focused on Europe here. And I think Russia's going to play their card. You know, I think it's very clear and that's not going to be good. It's not going to be good for the equity market. It's just going to weigh on sentiment even more. So I think it's going to be a hard summer. It's going to be a tough autumn and probably a tough winter for equities, at least the first half. If we look a bit closer into the U.S. economic data, and this is, and I'm going to try, like one of my goals in this show is to make economic data not sound boring, because it's not about like, you know, tracking GDP on a day or on a month over month basis. That is boring. Like that is like watching grass grow in slow motion. But you can make this really good and dynamic if you know what to look for. Like, I'm going to give you some stuff here. So for example, let's talk about housing for a second. So if we talk about housing, like U.S. housing, here's some stats. In July, which is data that came out this week, single family housing starts were down about 10% month over month, but about 18.5%. So almost twice that year over year. Housing starts. Again, people are going to start spending less as these fiscal conditions take hold. And that is going to weigh on the economy. And that is going to weigh on the equity market, which is why I'm saying I think the odds are 60% right now that we retest those lows in the S&P. Mortgage purchase applications fell are down 20% year over year. People canceling the contract. So home purchases that are in contract are getting canceled at a rate of about just north of 16%, which is up like, I don't know, like 50, 70% or so. I mean, it's massive. These are big, big things happening. Now, are we going to have a housing crisis? I don't think we can have a housing crisis, but I think things are going to slow down sharply. Does that mean we could see average housing prices drop 20, 30%? Yeah, I think it's possible. The demographics are good, though, so that's why I don't think we can have a crash. But I think we can have a meaningful slowdown. And I think, again, this is something that, you know, is easily overlooked if we get so giddy and excited about a bear market rally in the summer when no one's around and it's mostly computer-driven. But it's easy to lose sight of the big picture. I'll give you another statistic. The S&P 500 has never bottomed in a bear market with its price earnings ratio at 20. Guess where the PE right now is for the S&P? It's 20. So, you know, of course, it can always be different this time, but the odds are simply not favoring it, which is again why I'm saying the 60% chance that we're going to revisit the June lows. I'll give you one more. We just heard this week that the largest purchaser of U.S. single-family homes, BlackRock, the ticker symbol for BlackRock is, I'm going to start mentioning ticker symbols for companies we mentioned here. Hopefully I remember. The ticker symbol is BLK. They have just pulled back dramatically and even stopped buying single family homes in many areas of the continental United States. Why do you think they are doing that? They have a crazy amount of insight. They are seeing, in my view, lower housing prices going forward for a while. So again, all these things, and I'm not trying to sound bearish, I'm trying to sound, you know, factual from the data we're seeing at least. And so all these data points, whether it is some statistics as simple as stats around the S&P, whether it's what's going on in Europe, whether it's going what some really smart money like BlackRock is doing, all the economic data, it all points to me that the economy is going to continue to slow, and I think it's going to slow at a faster rate. If you're interested in our research that we do at the Steady Trader, I would encourage you to go over to thesteadytrader.com, sign up for our free newsletter where you're going to get a daily video with insights just like these in a shorter format. It's only like a 3-4 minute video. So go to thesteadytrader.com. Would love to have you there with daily insights into the markets that you can use for your trading and investing. Until then, we'll see you in the next podcast. And by the way, if you have suggestions or questions, you can always email support@thesteadytrader.com. That's support@thesteadytrader.com. And we will be happy to look at what kind of topics you would like us to cover. In fact, this top topic here today that we are talking about is one that was coming from a whole lot of users that were asking us to cover this in a more in-depth format in podcast. Thanks for listening to the Steady Wealth Podcast. I will see you in the next episode.